Welcome to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care. I'm Wolfgang Vashaw. Over the past few months, I've been posting presentations that were recorded at the 20th Biennial Conference of the National Association of Child Care Workers in South Africa. In several of those presentations, the Isibindi model was discussed. This innovative and life-changing program was developed in South Africa as a way to address some of the very difficult situations facing children and youth in that country. Every CYC and every country has a tremendous amount to learn from Isibindi, a word that means courage in Zulu. Today I'm speaking with Zeni Tumbadu, the Deputy Director of the National Association of Child Care Workers in South Africa and one of the key people in the creation of the Isibindi program. Welcome, Zeni, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
So let's start with a bit of an overview, and if you would, can you tell us what the Isibindi program is?
Isibindi is a child and youth care response to services to children, vulnerable children and families in communities, and particularly in rural communities in South Africa. The Isibindi model was designed by the National Association of Child and Youth Care Workers initially to respond to the AIDS pandemic, where in South Africa we found a large number of children living in child-headed households and vulnerable families. And so we decided that we needed to develop child and youth care workers in communities to work with children and service them right in their communities and in their homes.
You said there's a few things I want to pick up on there. Right in their communities, right in their homes. What do you mean by that? And what does that look like in practice?
Well, what we do is that we go into communities that have been targeted because they have a large number of children who are extremely vulnerable for reasons of poverty, HIV, AIDS, and child protection issues. So once these communities are identified, we go into the communities and in partnership with community structures and other role players, we recruit unemployed people, and we're a very large women's workforce, and then we offer them child and youth care training and accredited child and youth care training, and they are deployed to work in their very communities, servicing children in their families and in schools and clinics, and we've created our Safe Park model, which I can tell you a little bit more about later.
So as I understand it, you, and I've visited some Isibindi programs, so I'm somewhat familiar with it, but you identify communities that are particularly vulnerable. You then identify individuals, or you recruit individuals from that community, and you say, would you like to help your community? I'm a bit confused about how that works. You're not hiring existing social workers. You're looking for people within that community. That's correct, right?
Yes, we're looking for people within that community who have a desire and interest to work with children. So we are recruiting people to become child and youth care workers. Now, we're building in South Africa child and youth care workers bottoms up, so we say. Our education department allows for development of child and youth care workers and other social service professions at different levels. So we have decided to recruit and train child and youth care workers from these communities at an auxiliary or para level. So they're called auxiliary child and youth care workers once they've completed their training.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that struck me about this model is the idea of working in community, that people from the community are working with people in that community. And on the one hand, I think it's an incredibly hopeful and vibrant and appropriate response. And on the other hand, I become a little bit concerned, you know, who are these people? What are the relationships? What's the nature of relationships? How has the Isibindi program balanced the depth of knowledge that these workers have with the potential conflicts living in the same community they're working in?
I think it is a challenge that when people come from the very communities that they, with the children that they service, that they have to be able to understand the appropriate boundaries between professional and their own personal issues. But at the same time, we do recognize that in South Africa, we are dealing with our history of apartheid. And we see the process of working with children, including the parallel process of developing the child and youth care worker who comes from these circumstances. So, I use the word parallel processes. So we are aware that some of our child care workers might be wounded healers, and we accommodate that in our training and in our mentorship program, where they are provided with the support to cope with some of their own personal issues, even though I think there's an expectation that as para or auxiliary child and youth care workers, that they are committed to a professional code of ethics and they function in ways that are completely acceptable in their service delivery to children.
I'm so intrigued with that idea that not only is the program helping children and youth and vulnerable young people, but recognizing the legacy and the history that some of these workers may well have been born into apartheid, may well have been themselves children who grew up in childhood households, and that they have their own unique needs, and that your development of them is a parallel process. That's quite hopeful for me. What is the situation with children and youth at this point in the history of South Africa?
I think that what we recognize in South Africa is that we are a very youthful population, with a population of approximately 53 million people. 19 million are children. And so we have a responsibility to build a children's workforce that responds to young people, especially young people in situations of poverty, especially young children who are not having the appropriate access to the resources in the country because they're in rural areas that are not as well developed as the urban areas. We are dealing with some serious child protection issues. And with youth, we are dealing with unemployment and youth aspirations needing to be met. So all of these areas allow us in the Izibindi model in communities to work hand in hand with the community to look at how do we create a better future for our children and how do we, of course, protect our children in communities.
How do you decide which communities to bring the Izibindi project to?
The choice of communities is done in partnership with government, and government has identified their priorities, their political priorities, their places with high levels of poverty, high levels of child protection issues, rural areas, historically disadvantaged communities have been the target for government in most of the provinces that we've worked in.
The government seems incredibly supportive of children and youth in a way, quite honestly, that I've not seen in any other country. The commitment to children and youth is so profound from the government. And, you know, at the conference, for example, we saw that, you know, ministers speak. We constantly heard about support from the government. The government's a major funder of the Izibindi project. Why do you think the government recognizes or understands the needs of children and youth and puts so much energy into children and youth?
I think that historically in our apartheid history, children and children's rights, especially black children, has not been acknowledged and respected. And with our new democratic government, there has been a commitment to put children at the center of our services and our focus for delivery. I think the demographics, we are a youthful population, we are a children's country, also plays its part. We've also heard that, I think the UNICEF statistics, that says that at the end of the century, half of the world's children will come from Africa. So a commitment to children, I think, is a key focus of government. But besides government, we have a very strong NGO, non-government organization sector in our country who plays a very key role in advocacy around children's issues. So the non-government sector works in partnership with government to ensure that children's issues are center stage on our agenda.
It's quite a hopeful model, the Izzy Bindi model, and putting children and youth at the forefront. And it's actually a model that is other countries are recognizing, and particularly you brought up other countries in Africa, and the half of the world's population of children will be located in Africa not too distant future. I know there are other countries who are interested in the Izzy Bindi model. How transferable is the model?
You see, the Izzy Bindi model has been designed as a non-profit social franchise model. It has been designed for scale-up. And in many ways, I've heard a comment made that it has conceptual coherence. So it sings together well. And this is what has helped us scale up, from 1 to 3 and from 3 to 6 and from 6 to 12 and some 12 to 50. It grew exponentially because the way it was designed is quite easy actually to replicate. And so if you replicate the Izzy Bindi model outside of South Africa, it would just have to adapt to local conditions in other countries. It has an ability to be very easily replicated.
And where is it being replicated outside of South Africa right now?
We're at the moment in a partnership with the UNHCR to look at how the Izzy Bindi model could be adapted to work with refugees in Zambia. So the partnership is with the Zambian government, the ZACCW, which is the Zambian Association of Child and Youth Care Workers, the UNHCR, and together we're looking at how do we train refugees in Zambia into a very basic child and youth care practice, and then deploy them to work with the children in the refugee camps and in urban-based refugee settings.
So you would take the model, you would go into refugee camps, you would identify people within those camps, you would train them, and you would then have them work with children and youth refugees within those camps. Is that correct?
That would be exactly what the model would be. Obviously, the selection of the refugees and the localization of it would be in the hands of the local partners in Zambia in this case.
That would be a phenomenal model. And, obviously all over the world right now, there's a huge, huge discussion about refugees. And a vast amount of refugees obviously come from Africa, sort of the northern horn of Africa. But do you see that this is a model that could go to other refugee locations around the world? So refugees in Europe, for example, refugees from Syria. In Canada, we have a variety of refugees coming as well. Is this a model that you think could be replicated in those other locales as well?
I'm sure it could, and it would be adapted to meet the country's needs as well. I think what's interesting about the model is that it's community-based. It's focused on bringing child and youth care skills into service delivery to children. It's building a workforce, a child and youth care workforce. It's bringing in training, in our country, accredited training. And so I think each country could have an opportunity to look at the model and to, in some ways, if I could say, tweak it, move it around to suit them. So it's a very flexible model, and yet it's a non-profit social franchise model, and it has some non-negotiable core principles. And it's a combination of the fact that it can be custom designed to fit your need, and yet at the same time have those non-negotiable elements that maybe makes it easier to be scaled up.
So let's talk a little bit about specifics here. So you mentioned safe parks, for example. Could you explain what safe parks are, what some people might do, what sort of what it might look like in a rural community, and thirdly, what some of those non-negotiable aspects are?
Well, when we talk about the safe parks, well, within the Zibindi model, the child and youth care workers were taught about children's rights and the fact that children have a right to play. And in some of our rural areas, there is no place for children to play. So the child and youth care workers came back saying, well, how do you expect us to protect this right of children without having a place to play? And that's when we actually said, well, let's develop a place to play in the absence of one. And we looked at finding an open piece of land, putting a piece of fencing around it. And when we received funding, we put up play equipment and most importantly, trained child and youth care workers to play with children, to create activities with children, to do projects with children, to do homework supervision in Safe Park with children, to create a structure and a routine in a park that allowed for a safe, non-toxic environment for them to come to on a regular basis. The safe parks are quite popular in South Africa, and some of them are formal and quite sophisticated with the play equipment and toys and books and a range of activities that are structured for children and unstructured. And in some cases, we have developed the informal. One of the key successes of the Safe Park is child and youth care workers who play with children. We find that children love to play with adults, and they love to play with child care workers. And they love the routine and the predictability that's created in parks, and they love the excitement of being with their peers and their friends. And it's clearly a place where children learn well.
And so outside of the safe parks, what else do Zibindi workers do? And I'm going to post a few videos on the www.cycpodcast.org for people to look at to get a better sense. But perhaps you could tell us as well, what else would the Zibindi workers do outside of the safe parks?
Well, the core of Zibindi is actually the home visiting program. So child and youth care workers and communities go to families and children's homes, and they visit them and provide them with services in their homes. So the regular tasks of child care workers would be to do family assessments, to do individual assessments of children, to ensure that all children are going to school, to ensure that social security, we call them grants, government grants, come in if there is a need for funding. If children have been abused, then we follow the appropriate protocols in getting to work with social workers to ensure that children get child protection services. We spend time supporting families in order for them to be able to care for their children better. We see our services to children in the context of family and community.
When I was visiting one of the Zibindi programs, I was quite struck at how close the workers were. You know, everything from waking children up in the morning to helping grandmother access her medication because she has mobility issues, to helping with homework, to being almost an advocate to make sure that legal protocols are followed around guardianship. The breadth of interventions that these workers were doing was quite incredible. And given the nature of the training, that, you know, these people are not, you know, master's degree social workers, they're people from the community who've been trained, I found it quite impressive. What are some of the core elements that would be brought regardless of the location of the Isabindi project?
Well, the training is important to talk about, I would think. What we do is we take our training to the communities where the child and youth care workers work. So we train in communities and we take an adult education approach to our training. We also recognize that our learners may be, as I said, wounded healers. So we create a core group of trainers who understand this context and take the child and youth care theory, which is trained in 16 different modules, and train them in their communities. We have a mentorship program. So our approach to training is that they're trained in a module per month, and they're allowed to actually incrementally practice some of the training under the mentorship of an experienced, trained, regulated child and youth care worker who visits them and provides that online supervision and consultative supervision. So it's a combination of training and supervision that is an approach that we've taken to the Isabindi training. So how we train is a very special, unique component of the Isabindi model. The other elements that make it a social franchise model is that the way we screen, select the learners in the first place follows a procedure, and it's a very strong partnership model. So the community members and community stakeholders are involved in this process so that there is community buy-in to the Isabindi project and support from the community for the Isabindi child and youth care workers.
Finally, as we start to wrap this up, you know, the big question that's floating in my head is, what are the results? What are you seeing as the impact on children and youth and the auxiliary workers who are working? Has there been any research done on outcomes?
Yes, we're finding that the Isabindi children are finding close to them in communities a resource that they can turn to. We are unfortunately receiving a lot of referrals about abuse and child protection issues that we have to respond to. And it's, I suppose, good that we are there so the children have a child-focused adult that they can turn to. The children in Isabindi are doing very well at school. We have a very good relationship with schools who are feeling very positive about Isabindi children because they say they're coming focused to school and are getting the support they need with homework and with their attitude towards school. Last year, we had a 73% high school pass rate. Now, the national average was 76% in South Africa. And we in the Isabindi children received a 73% pass rate, which means that we've done really well considering where we are located. So we feel that that is a very clear success, that Isabindi children are progressing. For the child and youth care workers, many of them have found careers for themselves. They're earning stipends or salaries. They are respected in their community. They are skillful in responding to broader needs than just children. They're getting an appropriate accredited training and an education. And many of them, and because they are women as well, are finding their voice and their power. So from a woman's empowerment point of view, there's some tremendous magic happening in their lives.
Is there anything else that you would like to share about the Isabindi project as we end this conversation, Zenny?
I just want to just maybe say that it's a very culturally competent program. Mm. And the reason it's working well in so many different cultural communities is because the child and youth care workers are able to apply their life space work. They are able to work in families and in communities, drawing on their own experiences and making their work culturally competent. So, for an example, if I can share a story, a child care workers go into the families to cook for them and to support them. Quite often they would say to children, "Well, what did your ma cook when she was alive?" And the children would say that, you know, she cooked sugar beans or sampan beans, which is very hard for us to cook, and we don't remember how she used to do it. And then the childcare worker would sit them down and cook with them, teaching them how to cook a meal that their mother cooked, helping them write the recipe down so that they would be able to cook that meal maybe when she wasn't around, which is quite empowering. But at the same time, they would be talking about their mother, and they would be talking about meals, and they would be talking about cultural traditions and family traditions. And in some way, child and youth care workers reclaim family memories. They reclaim family traditions and cultural customs, which might have been lost without them. So in the therapeutic use of daily life events, child and youth care workers demonstrate this when they're cooking, when they're bathing with children, when they're spending time with them making memory boxes that help them cope with some of the grief in many of the homes that we work in.
That's a beautiful way to end, and I very much saw that. I think the model is just, it's an incredible program. So much opportunity for care and love and growth for all the parties, and I think immensely exportable. So I really hope that people look into it more. I want to thank you so much for being part of creating this project, bringing awareness of this project to many, many people, and for having this conversation with me today, Zenny.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast.
Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher.
Visit us online at cycpodcast.org.